Chapter 3. The very thought of you and them, I blew. Love supreme seems far removed. I get along without you very well some other nights. Lord, the radio news reader chimes, reporting Russian lullabies. She'll turn to me awake and ask, is everything all right? And love, I wouldn't know where to start. Cody slips his arms into the sleeves of his new white jacket and adjusts it so it sits comfortably on his shoulders. He feels as though he has to be too careful, in case he ruins all the whiteness and the neat embroidered letters in gold around the sleeves and collar and the front of his coat. The letters are the names of his clan, his father's family, and his. He's getting married today. Not that he's ever planned much for this, but he does suppose when he was much younger, he thought he would feel more excited. Instead, he just feels heavy, a little jittery, stomach twisted up, like before a fight, almost. Maybe it's just that he desperately wants this to go well, to be the right decision. For his people, certainly, because he doesn't want to hurt his planet, but really, well, he's making Obi-Wan part of his Halith, and in the simplest sense, he wants it to be good. He doesn't need some kind of fancy marriage. He just wants to be able to be happy with his family. That's all. Just some comfort and a partnership with Obi-Wan that works. He'll take that. God, he's overthinking this. He straightens his dark blue tunic, adjusts the coat again, and goes to the fresher to anxiously run a comb through his hair a couple times. Then he sighs and goes to his bedroom to get the silver engraved circlet that he's never worn since the day they crowned him Duke. He hates wearing it, but it's apparently traditional to wear it, so he settles it on his head and tries not to feel self-conscious. He pulls on his soft gray boots and hooks the darksaber to his belt, tracing the square edges of the hilt for a second. This was his plan and his idea, so we better just do it. He's not a child anymore and certainly doesn't need to be afraid of a few ritual promises. He leaves his rooms with his hands clasped behind his back and meets Rex on the way through the hall. Rex says they'd told a couple warriors to get Obi-Wan. Are you ready? He asks. And Cody smiles tightly. Of course I am, he says. Rex just snorts softly like he knows that's Bantha shit, and reaches over to squeeze Cody's shoulder. Rex is in a deep blue tunic, mostly simply dressed, with his blasters on his hips. He's made a concession to the formality of the event with a neat black jacket over the tunic, but Cody thinks Rex would rather just still be in his armor. Hey, it's not so bad, Rex says. You guys will get a bunch of presents later, and then we can all get as drunk as we want. Cody rolls his eyes. Helpful, Vodka. I know. You're welcome. They walk to the throne room, one of the side entrances across from the dais where the throne usually sits. For the time being, it's clear, and Rusan is standing poised and composed with her hands folded behind her back. Cody can hear everyone talking amongst themselves, fairly quietly, and the twisted-up feeling in his stomach returns in full force. Rex is a steadying presence at his shoulder, though, and that helps. You might be right, he says, very quietly, as Rusan starts talking to the gathered people about their purpose here today and that kind of thing. I'm probably crazy. Nah. Rex scoffs, clapping a hand on his back bracingly. I'm sure this will be fine. If it's not, you can just get really drunk. You give the shittiest advice, Cody says, dry. I'm trying to get less nervous, Rex. Shut up. Okay, well, seriously. It'll be fine. Rex shushes him then, and nods at Rasan. Pay attention. If you miss her saying you're supposed to go out, she'll shoot you. Rex is right. So Cody focuses, deliberately relaxing his hands at his sides. After a little more talking, Rusan falls silent and glances either way. So Cody swallows, squares his shoulders, and paces forward to join her. Absently, he notes representatives from both planets standing in the small crowd of people, with friends, teachers, his clan, Anakin, Boba, and his Buir. He decides he'd better not look at them right now. He turns his eyes front again and finds Obi-Wan stepping up onto the dais as he does. He offers Obi-Wan a small, commiserating smile and gets one in return, which helps a little. Obi-Wan is in a soft kind of gray-blue that makes his eyes look brighter and sharper than they are. And although Cody supposes the clothes are still Jedi robes, they certainly flatter him better than anything else he's worn thus far, make him look tall and resolute. Between the gold light filtering from the throne room windows and the cool color of Obi-Wan's robes, his copper hair is lit on fire, and Cody almost wants to run his fingers through it. None of this, strictly speaking, settles Cody's nerves. But the experience has definitely gotten more pleasant all around. He can't complain about the view, anyway. Rusan smiles almost amusedly at them both, then says, in a firm voice that carries through the hall, "You may join hands." Cody holds out a hand for Obi-Wan's, and when he takes it, Obi-Wan squeezes his fingers a little. His hand is warm and a little calloused, and Cody manages another smile. "Both of you, repeat after me," Rusan says, more quietly, almost encouraging, and Cody takes a steadying breath. "Mihi solus tome, mihi solus dartome," she starts, and Cody echoes it after her, in time with Obi-Wan. "We are one when together, we are one when parted. Mi me de nui an, mi barduri verde. We will share all. We will raise warriors." As they say their vows, Rusan wraps a white sash, embroidered in gold, with the words Hat, Ija, Hait around their hands, smooth and careful, sealing the promises. "Uri Hat," Rusan says, smiling a little and nodding, decisive. And in true Mando fashion, everyone erupts in a flurry of clapping hands and stomping feet in approval, whether they personally approve or not. The tension leaves Cody all in a rush, and he sighs a little, glancing back down at his and Obi-Wan's hands. "That's it," he supposes. "They're married." When Obi-Wan had first read about Mandalorian marriage customs, he'd thought the whole thing rather old-fashioned, although refreshingly simplistic in some ways. Simply four phrases to seal the marriage, and, if there's time, a piece of cloth wrapped around joined hands to symbolize the vows. He still thinks it's old-fashioned, but standing here with his hand bound to Cody's by soft, smooth white fabric, he thinks, maybe, there's a beauty in that. Once the cheers die down a bit, Cody, who looks very good in white and blue and gold, an engraved silver circlet on his brow that makes his eyes stand out more, and Obi-Wan swallows a bit and tries not to focus on that, reaches out and takes one edge of the sash, nodding at Obi-Wan a bit. Obi-Wan follows suit, and together, they unwrap their hands. Cody folds the sash up and tucks it in his pocket after, and then they both turn to face the crowd, and Obi-Wan sees Anakin looking out of place in his dark Jedi robes and grease-smudged face, but smiling. Pause for a moment, and then walk together down the center aisle between family, friends, and allies. The small group of diplomats from Stujon look universally pleased by the occasion, and pass through the doors at the end of the throne room. Only once they're through the doors does Cody let go of Obi-Wan's hand. Obi-Wan doesn't exactly mourn the loss of contact, per se, but there had been something almost steadying about it, an anchor point against the unfamiliarity of everything. Outside, a reception has been set up. Long wooden tables laid down with food and alcohol. There's an area set aside for dancing, or, knowing Mando's, fighting, tucked among the trees and curtains of moss and flowers. Sunlight spills liquid golden over everything, fading in through the opaque surface of the biodome, turning everything into a scene straight from some fantastical landscape almost, if one ignores the buildings in the background. When he glances over at Cody, the light is catching in his hair and eyelashes and sparkling off the silver circlet and gold embroidery on his coat. Obi-Wan swallows and looks away again, but the image sticks in his mind like the trees and flowers he loves to sketch. The party gets started very quickly, once the guests follow him and Cody outside. The two of them are ensconced in seats at the head of the main table, with Anakin and the Fett brothers and Jango and no one else. A band shows up and starts playing, food is passed around, and Anakin leans forward with a gleeful grin on his face. Oh dear. I wish I could see the looks on the council's faces when they see the broadcast, he says. And Obi-Wan huffs and rolls his eyes. Anakin, this is why you get in trouble so often, he says, smiling. Why, because I like seeing them ruffled? Anakin shrugs. It's usually worth it. Was putting worms in Mace Windu's underwear worth it? Cody laughs a bit at that. Wait, you did what? Boba asks in basic, perking up. And Anakin grins. Some of the younglings in the Temple Crush wanted to sneak ants into Windu's pants, but they don't have the fine control to corral animals that small. Neither do I, but I can do worms, so... Anakin's smile grows wider, and he leans forward a bit. We got some worms, and I used the Force to sneak them into Windu's pants. And it garnered you sanitation duty and several extra hours of meditation, Obi-Wan says wryly. And likely, Master Windu's permanent ire. Anakin shrugs. Worth it. Boba considers this for a moment, then says, I tried to sneak worms into Jack's armor once. Obi-Wan turns his head to one side in an attempt to hide a smile, traces a finger absently over his saber hilt, and sighs. Anakin appears to be telling Boba about the time one of the younglings, Ahsoka Tano, stole Mace's robes from his closet. No one ever found them, Obi-Wan interjects, smiling a bit. Mace sulked about it for a week. Then Master Yoda smacked him in the shins with a stick in front of half the temple, Anakin says, and told him off. It was the best moment of my life. Anakin, Obi-Wan says. What? Obi-Wan shakes his head and sighs. Can't entirely help a smile. Never mind, he says, more amused than scolding. There's no real harm in Anakin having some fun, after all. Feasts have always been one of Cody's favorite parts of being a duke. Nobody expects him to behave with excessive decorum. Everybody's just enjoying themselves and drinking and eating and being comfortable. The celebration for the wedding will last for the next 2 days. Just food and fighting and a good dose of chaos. Based on the current topic of conversation, Cody fully expects to wake up sometime in the next few days with some kind of insect in his bed, courtesy of Boba, and possibly some of the servants. He doesn't find that he minds at the moment, although later he's sure he will. While they're busy discussing another of Boba's favorite pranks, and Cody's least favorite, because Boba had decided to criff with the cooks and their food was terrible for a week as a result. Jango leans over to Cody and says, quietly, "You did a good job making this decision. I don't know what I think of Kenobi yet, but you were doing well." His boy smiles a little and turns back to his drink. "I am proud." Cody fights the urge to shift sheepishly in his seat and instead nods, smiling a little, warmth filling his chest. "Thank you, Boor," he says. Jango just smiles into his drink. People are beginning to leave their tables, plates half empty, to dance, and some of them come over to Cody and Obi-Wan's table. Cody refocuses on Obi-Wan, realizing that he hadn't explained this part of their wedding traditions to him. Wedding gifts are simple enough, but for something like this, they're also a symbol of loyalty, that the clans have accepted Cody's decision and will continue to stand with him and his clan. So the gifts that people bring to them now are quality knives, pieces of armor, tricked-out blasters, other pieces of equipment, a few food items. The list is varied, but everything is useful. Obi-Wan is good at thanking people and acting appropriately appreciative, although Cody thinks he'd better explain the actual reasoning behind the gifts. But he can do that later. For now, he thanks everyone along with Obi-Wan, eats food and listens to the music, and watches as a few of the clan representatives, who've already given gifts, start a sparring match. During a few minutes where everyone's distracted and leaving them alone, Cody glances over at Obi-Wan and smiles a little, encouragingly. "How are you doing?" he asks lightly. Obi-Wan's lips quirk up slightly, and he says, "It's certainly less irritating and monotonous than some of the events I've been to."
"I praise."
"At least this is interesting," Obi-Wan laughs, which Cody supposes is meant as a compliment of sorts. "Just what everyone wants, for the Redur to find their wedding interesting." "Well, good," he answers with a chuckle, and absently runs his thumb over the embroidery of the cuff of his sleeve. "If you need a break, we can always step away for a while. They won't miss us." "I'll keep that in mind," Obi-Wan says with a slight smile, and turns his attention to Anakin, who appears to be talking to one of Cody's friends about sparring. Cody looks back down to his hands and sighs a little. He could go get involved in a contest of his own, but it would be poor form to leave Obi-Wan to sit by himself. And anyway, the palace tailor would definitely murder him if he messed these clothes up. Another few moments, as Anakin gets involved in a spar, which Cody expects he's going to lose from the look of things. The representative from Clan Vizsla, Prey Vizsla, comes over with what Cody assumes is a gift in one hand. Prey is a slightly older man with a hard-lined face and steely eyes. Prey is easy to read, and Cody can tell he doesn't want to be here, which is no surprise. Prey has never approved of Cody's leadership, and Cody's pretty sure Clan Vizsla is only still in alliance with the rest of the clans because Prey swore loyalty to Jango. Cody gets Prey's loyalty, to an extent, only because Prey respects his boer. This might be a bit much for him, even though Jango has clearly put his support behind Cody's decision. Prey comes up to the table and sets his gift down in front of Obi-Wan with a thunk of glass on wood. It's a small bottle, sealed, full of an opaque, milky liquid. Cody frowns.
"Thank you, Vizsla," he says dryly. "What is this exactly?"
Rey is looking at Obi-Wan when he answers, although Cody thinks he's addressing both of them.
Poison. I hope you can find a use for it, Fett.
He smiles thinly.
And everyone within earshot goes very quiet.
Judging by the reactions of the Mandalorians around him, Obi-Wan guesses that poison, despite fitting the bill as a weapon, isn't exactly the kind of gift appreciated at a wedding. There's likely some cultural subtext he's missing here. He's been doing a lot of that, he thinks. Reading up on their culture would have possibly been more beneficial than their history. But he can parse out the sentiment behind the gift easily enough. It bothers him, just a little bit, that someone wants him dead over this. But it doesn't surprise him. He pushes those emotions back, lets them dissipate into the Force, attunes himself more to the emotions in the atmosphere. There's anger, bitterness, a cool satisfaction radiating from Vizsla, mostly surprise and anger from the rest of the guests, and a sharp, cold anger from Cody. Obi-Wan's beginning to think that shouldn't surprise him as much as it does.
I'm not interested in your gift, thank you, Cody says,
stony and icy. And Obi-Wan glances at his new husband's, that'll take some getting used to, face for more information. Finds nothing to read, turns back to Vizsla, who is smiling, thin and razor sharp, deadly almost. A touch of not even slightly real warmth to the expression that just makes everything more dangerous.
He is one who will need to be watched, Obi-Wan thinks.
Very well, Vizsla says, scoops the small vial of poison up into his hand and tucks it in his belt.
You know how to reach me if you change your mind.
I won't, Cody says, in a voice colder than the winds on Ilum. His whole demeanor changes in an instant, from icy and remote to oozing friendly politeness, all of it as fake as the warmth in Vizsla's smile. If you don't want to be here, Vizsla, you are perfectly free to excuse yourself.
Maybe I will,
Vizsla snaps, suddenly harsh, one hand setting on his blaster. And Obi-Wan doesn't entirely mean to tense into readiness, but his hand strays down to his saber hilt anyway. There's something very much off here, and he knows enough about politics in general to feel the schism coming.
I don't think this alliance best serves my clan anymore. You've all grown soft.
And his voice drips with derision.
I listen to you because of him.
Vizsla gestures with one hand at Jango.
But no more. You would willingly tie Mandalore to a Jedi?
Vizsla pauses, all angry disbelief and narrowed eyes. And Obi-Wan almost knows what's coming before he says it.
Clan Vizsla, at least, does not forget Galadron so easily.
That's enough, Prey, Jango says. Too calmly.
No,
Prey Vizsla says sharply.
It's not. As long as a Jedi is tied to the throne, you are all Aruetise, and we won't stand with you. Vizsla, we're leaving.
There's movement behind Obi-Wan, Vizsla's retinue disengaging from the rest of the wedding guests. And then the Force shrieks, danger, and Obi-Wan reacts, instinctive, drops out of his chair and rolls to his feet, saber snapping to vivid life as a blaster bolt scorches through the air where he'd been sitting a second ago.
Master?
Anakin asks across their training bond, and Obi-Wan absently soothes him.
Cody's on his feet, too, both hands tight around his saber's hilt, and the long black blade is fully ignited.
Obi-Wan's only seen pictures of the Darksaber, made by one of the only Mandalorian Jedi centuries ago, stolen from the temple and used as an heirloom to indicate the Mandalore ever since. Without the Darksaber, no one would have had a hope of uniting the clans.
Obi-Wan supposes their lucky Jango had it years ago.
Get out,
Cody growls, low and fierce. The Mando who'd taken the shot is still standing with their blaster out, fully armored and helmet covering their face. At Cody's words, though, they inch toward their family members? Obi-Wan isn't entirely sure how the clan system works, who all have blasters out themselves.
Let's go, Verde, Prey Vizsla says, too casually. It seems we've worn out our welcome.
That, Obi-Wan thinks, is an understatement. What follows is a tense few moments where the Vizsla warriors join their leader and back away, weapons still out as though they're expecting an attack, until they step onto a few speeders. Prey himself is the last one on. He throws a mocking salute in their direction before speeding away. Strangely, Obi-Wan doesn't think that relaxes anyone. He deactivates his saber and tucks it away with a practical ease, rides his chair, which he'd knocked over in his haste to escape what was apparently an assassination attempt, and says, lightly but quiet, "When will people learn that attempting to shoot a Jedi from the back has just as much likelihood of succeeding as from the front? Honestly." He sighs, absently straightens his sleeves, and glances over at Anakin, who just looks angry and more than a little unsure.
It's all right, Anakin, but you should come back over here for a bit.
He feels a scent before Anakin does as asked, leaving the Mando he'd been sparring with and coming over to their table, one hand anxiously tugging on his Padawan braid.
You should probably be grateful they haven't worked that out yet,
Cody says wryly, extinguishing the darksaber and returning the hilt to his belt. Obi-Wan shrugs.
It gets tiresome. I'd rather they didn't bother with the murder attempts at all, but that's clearly too much to ask given the times. People do seem to forget about the Force to a surprising extent, though.
He sighs a bit, says, very wry.
It's almost as though they think it's nothing more than fancy telekinesis and mind tricks.
Given that he'd recently heard a diplomat using exactly those words to explain to another why the Jedi think themselves better than us at a recent event he'd attended, he is fairly sure it's not an uncommon belief. Cody sits down with a sigh, resting his hands briefly on the table and glancing around to try to gauge the mood of the people around him.
Is it not?
He asks mildly, mostly kidding. He's not particularly focused on the conversation. His buoyer nods at him a little, calmly, although his eyes are burning. Cody wouldn't put it past him to go find Prey later for a discussion. Jack Ordo, who's standing on the opposite side of the room with Rusan, looks like he might either spontaneously combust or go after Prey. Everyone else just looks tense, uncomfortable. But at least not like they disapprove. For the most part. Bo-Katan has a sour look on her face. Obi-Wan sighs long-sufferingly, probably since Cody just asked a stupid question, and answers, "If I thought you were actually interested, I'd explain," dryly. Suffice it to say, it's much more than that.
"Good for you,"
Cody says absently, half-smiling, and raps his knuckles on the table before turning his attention to Boba, who looks very concerned.
"You okay, Vodka?"
he asks.
"Yeah," Boba huffs, like it's a dumb question. "Obviously."
Rex snorts. Rex looks like he wants to go with Jack and go chase Prey down. Cody shakes his head minutely at his brother, and then sighs and stands up.
"My apologies for the interruption," he says, projecting his voice smooth and calm. "Please, let's continue with the celebration."
Then he sits down, reaches for his glass of wine, and shrugs a little at Obi-Wan.
I don't have an excuse for him or his clan, he says quietly. I'm sorry about all that.
Don't be, it's quite all right. Obi-Wan shrugs. I didn't expect this to exactly be smooth, given the complicated history. Besides, this is hardly the first time someone's tried to kill a Jedi at a diplomatic event. I've been dealing with it since I was 13. I'm very much used to it by now. He chuckles slightly, and Cody rolls his eyes.
That hardly makes it all right, Obi-Wan. But fair enough.
Cody sighs and waves his hand a little, watches the people around him slowly get back to what they were doing.
I mean, people have been trying to kill us since I met him, Anakin says in basic, grinning a little. It's not that unusual.
Cody's not really sure how he's following the conversation, but maybe Obi-Wan's taught him enough Mandoa to at least follow along.
And yet he still makes no effort to stop being aggravating, Jango says, but with an almost approving smile.
I have never been aggravating a day in my life, Obi-Wan says, which even Cody can tell isn't true, making Jango scoff and roll his eyes.
Master, Anakin says flatly, you are the most annoying person I know. You literally invited the person who kidnapped you to torture you. Who does that?
When did you do that? Cody asks wryly, raising an eyebrow at Obi-Wan.
I was under the impression that Jatissa had a slightly better sense of self-preservation than that.
Anakin bursts into a fit of laughter, giving Obi-Wan a look that clearly says, do you believe this? Cody huffs a little and glances at his boer, who just sighs and takes a long drink of his glass of whiskey.
My sense of self-preservation is perfectly fine. They were going to torture me anyway, and besides, they were amusingly angry when the only thing I'd tell them was that they weren't trying hard enough.
Obi-Wan shrugs a little, as if this really had all just been a minor inconvenience.
Dear gods, Rex mutters, with a look of morbid fascination.
Cody snorts.
You're not helping your case.
There was that time with the drug cartel when we found out he's allergic to spice. Anakin muses, and Obi-Wan makes a face and cuts him off.
All right, Anakin, that's enough, he says, a bit sharp.
He knew, Anakin explains, a bit gleeful, and he didn't bother to tell us before the mission. Obi-Wan rubs his face with one hand, tiredly, half glaring at Anakin, and Cody chuckles a little.
Duly noted. No spice for you.
Don't listen to a thing he says. He's exaggerating and making me sound worse than I am, Obi-Wan says, dry. But there's a warm little half-smile on his face, exasperated, and Cody can't help thinking it's a nice smile.
Anakin huffs, I am definitely not exaggerating.
And Obi-Wan glances up at the sky as if he expects it to sympathize with him.
I'm sure he is, Cody says to Obi-Wan, pretending to agree, although he does grin a bit mischievously because, really, he is pretty sure Anakin's dead serious.
Thank you for the support, Obi-Wan says, sighing deeply as if he's disappointed, although Cody thinks he's not. Even if it's not genuine.
It's very genuine, Cody protests, as if he would ever be sarcastic.
Obi-Wan laughs, rolling his eyes, and lifts his glass to have a sip of wine. Cody likes what his smile does to his eyes, makes them warm and a bit sparkly.
Not that it matters, though. It's just kind of cute.
Everything eases back into a comfortable, boisterous energy, and Clan Vizsla's split from the Clan Alliance seems all but forgotten. Cody sticks by Obi-Wan for the most part, although he does dance for a while when Boba insists that he has to. Anakin makes a few friends in the course of sparring,
Jack leaves after a while. Cody's boyer comes in and out to check on him. And Cody manages to mostly avoid the fact that the man next to him is his redoer now. That whatever else happens, they're partners now. Like they promised. We will share all. Cody had never much thought about it before, but now he thinks it might be something he wants. Just that. He doesn't need more. Over the course of the next week, Obi-Wan starts to settle into his new routine, learning the ins and outs of living on Mandalore. The first couple of days are almost entirely occupied by celebrations and treaty discussions. Once the treaty is signed, the rest of the Stujon delegates return to their homeworlds, and things begin to settle down. On the third day, Cody suggests Obi-Wan go to the palace tailor to get fitted for formal wear and civilian-style clothes. Something to do with becoming part of their culture, Obi-Wan suspects, or simply just not reminding everyone on a daily basis that he's a Jedi, one of their enemies. He's not actually opposed to wearing something other than robes during casual leisure time, but he suspects he'll miss the weight of them. The comfortable way they help him hide his reactions during meetings. The tailor promises he'll have clothes ready by the end of the week, which Obi-Wan would think is plenty of time. Another plant appears in his room after a couple more days. This one a rarer flowering vine that decorates an entire grove of trees in a more secluded spot of the temple gardens. Qui-Gon had showed him the spot years ago, citing it as one of the better places to meditate, and Obi-Wan's taken to spending the occasional hour there in meditation. The vine doesn't entirely feel like the gardens and the Force, but it's enough to soothe. Its appearance is also what makes Obi-Wan decide he should bring the plants up with Cody the next time he sees him. Cody is apparently very busy over the course of the next 2 days, however, and with the training yard still off-limits, due to Jack Ordo's presence there, Obi-Wan spends most of his time in the palace library. It's huge, though nowhere approaching the size of the Jedi archives, and Obi-Wan finds a holo novel about Mandalorian customs, and another that's a Mandalorian account of the massacre of Galadron, and begins to read. He shifts from the book on customs to the history of Galadron quickly enough, deciding that the customs he can learn just as easily through experience. The Mandalorian viewpoint of Galadron, and coincidentally, quite a bit of their exact opinions on Jedi, however, is not the sort of topic he wants to learn in such a hands-on manner. The text he's reading gives a much more thorough description of the Mandalorian's view of the events leading up to the massacre than the archives, which only makes sense, although this volume barely touches on the fact that the Jedi were manipulated into attacking the people they'd come to help. It goes into more detail about the fates of both Jango and Jack, discusses the remembrances and funerals held for the dead, and even goes into detail on how the massacre helped set the stage for the vicious civil war that followed not many years later. He's in the middle of taking notes on his datapad, comparing points where this history and the archives' history contradict, when someone walks up. The Force signature belongs to Cody, and Obi-Wan sighs to himself, and clears his throat meaningfully. "Hello, Cody," Obi-Wan says, not looking up. "I'm sorry if Anakin bothered you. He gestures vaguely with the hand holding his datapad, then types in another interesting tidbit from the book. "Did you need something?" "I brought lunch," Cody says dryly, and Obi-Wan blinks and looks up. "Ah," he says, and then frowns. "Anakin did bother you then?" "Not exactly, but he talked to me," Cody says, offering out the bowl and flask he's carrying. Obi-Wan takes them, the smell of food reminding him that he hasn't eaten since dinner the night before. "Oops," What do you have there?
Obi-Wan takes a drink before answering. Obviously, I read the account of Galadron in the Jedi Archives, but there are elements missing, so I decided to read your own history of the event, during which I noticed contradictions and biases in both histories, so I'm making notes in an attempt to eliminate both and create one singular narrative. He shrugs a bit, takes a bite of the soup. It's thick and rich, a bit spicy.
Cody looks briefly surprised before he says, "So, a little light reading, then?"
"Quite," Obi-Wan agrees. "It's all very interesting." He pauses, then says, "Speaking of light, you wouldn't happen to know why plants have been appearing in my rooms, would you?"
Cody decides to leave the topic of Galadron and Obi-Wan's apparent project for later, and instead smiles a little at the Jedi's question and shrugs.
"Perhaps I know a little about it. Do you like them?"
He's pleased about the little gesture. Hopefully it's been as nice for Obi-Wan as he'd hoped it would be. Obi-Wan chuckles slightly, says, "Oh, I do, actually. They're quite nice."
"Good."
Cody smiles and moves around to sit on the stiff couch Obi-Wan seated on. "How are you settling in?"
"Well enough, I suppose," Obi-Wan says, which isn't really a glowing endorsement, but good enough.
"It's very different from the temple."
Cody laughs.
"Imagine that, a Mandalorian palace being different from the JT temple."
"I didn't say I was surprised," Obi-Wan says, rolling his eyes, and Cody snorts, smiling a little.
He can't tell what Obi-Wan thinks of him, and it unnerves him a little. He is not sure Obi-Wan likes him or his people, and he knows he shouldn't care, but he still does.
"Well, I hope it's not a bad difference," he says mildly.
"Neither good nor bad, just different," says Obi-Wan, in a tone that Cody can't decipher, and that doesn't reassure him.
He smiles a little, though, and adds, "I'm definitely impressed by the food."
"Our best claim to fame," Cody jokes,
feeling unaccountably awkward. "It's nice, Cody," Obi-Wan says. "You can relax." Cody shrugs a little and leans back against the arm of the couch, pulling on his sleeves just a bit. The hilt of his saber digs slightly into his hip.
"I've been thinking you should start coming to some of my meetings," he suggests.
"Are your advisors going to be all right with that?"
Cody smiles.
"They've been expecting it. It's part of the marriage, I'm afraid."
He doesn't really know what Obi-Wan thinks about that, either.
"As long as I wouldn't be upsetting anyone by being there, I'll be perfectly happy attending."
Obi-Wan keeps eating the stew Cody brought, and ironically still manages to look perfectly sophisticated.
"Well," Cody makes a face, wry, "I'm not sure you wouldn't, but the fact is that they have to deal with it. It'll all settle down soon enough."
In that respect, he thinks Clan Vizsla leaving did them a favor. Nearly everyone else disapproves of that reaction, so they've been more supportive as a result. Never mind that Cody's still a little concerned about what Vizsla's planning to do now that he's left their alliance.
"Fair enough," Obi-Wan says with a nod. "In that case, perhaps you should bring me up to date on the current state of affairs here, so that I can actually contribute?"
Cody chuckles a little.
"I can tell you about some of the things we're discussing currently, yes," he says. Obi-Wan's mostly going to have to learn with time, like anyone else. But Cody explains to him some of their recent issues with trade, how they're trying to decide how much funding to allot to education, and the things they're worrying about with Clan Vizsla's desertion.
"I actually have a few questions about Pre Vizsla," Obi-Wan says, and Cody nods.
"Don't we all?"
he mutters.
"What are yours?"
I'm assuming there's cultural subtext behind the poison. Obi-Wan's voice is dry, vaguely amused.
Yes.
Cody taps his fingers on his knee.
He was calling us both cowards, and it's...
He thinks for a minute.
Something of a backhanded gesture. The other gifts were symbols of support, I guess you'd call them, which is the point. His was a warning.
Cody suspects Prey had meant to remain as part of the clans for a while yet, if Cody hadn't pissed him off. Obi-Wan nods thoughtfully, stroking his beard.
I can't imagine he's the only one angry with your choice here, but no one else joined him when he spoke out against you.
No one else had the guts,
Cody says, jokingly, and then shrugs.
But in all seriousness, I think everyone else simply trusts my judgment more than he does. He's always had some very extreme ideas about what Mandalore should be doing in the galaxy.
Obi-Wan snorts.
Didn't he technically break an oath by leaving the Alliance? Especially with one of his men shooting at me. From what I recall reading, he would have sworn an oath to follow your rule when you became Mandalore.
He didn't swear any oaths to me,
Cody says, a bit tiredly.
He followed my booer, and that's the only reason he ever listened to me. And anyway, I'm not really the Mandalore.
Not while Jango's still around.
If it ever came down to it, people would take his word over Cody's any day. He doesn't mind, because he understands. His booer is a legend.
Obi-Wan's brow furrows a bit, like he's trying to solve a puzzle. And he says,
But you have the Darksaber.
He pauses and considers.
But you never passed a trial by combat to receive it?
Cody raises an eyebrow.
No, he says flatly. My boar passed it down to me.
So technically speaking, you can't claim the title as Jango still holds it?
Obi-Wan asks, clarifying, and Cody sighs.
It's not a matter of can't. Nobody thinks of me as Mandalore, and everyone still attributes the title to him, although I'm pretty sure he could take it or leave it. To a certain extent, it isn't up to either of us.
Cody pauses.
But no. If I wanted to attempt to call myself Mandalore, most people wouldn't accept it.
Obi-Wan's beginning to look, for some reason, distracted and thoughtful, frowning a bit.
Interesting, he says, and looks away for a minute, consideringly.
Cody frowns, shrugs a little, and crosses his arms. He doesn't know what Obi-Wan's thinking still, and it irritates him.
Yeah, so Prey decided, apparently, that he didn't have to listen to me.
Then Jango could have stepped in and ordered Prey to stay, correct?
Cody shrugs. Yeah, but he doesn't try to take things over from me. And at a certain point, if someone is trying that hard to leave, you don't want them staying.
He smiles a little, shaking his head, and looking absently around the library.
He'd just create dissension at this point.
The idea that the title of Mandalore is almost entirely based on the Mandalorian people's decision to grant it to a person is a fascinating one. Obi-Wan does his best to quarantine that idea to a corner of his mind where he can think on its implications later, when he's not in the middle of an important conversation educating him on the information he'll need to know if he's going to do a semi-decent job of force of co-ruling a planet.
That's a terrifying thought. He can barely manage Anakin some days. Now he's expected to handle an entire world?
Force preserve him.
It makes sense, he says, thoughtful, rubs a hand over his beard.
If Jango had intervened, it would have undercut your rule, And in any case, assassination attempts are in poor taste, especially at a wedding. I'm more concerned that other clans might follow his example, possibly leading up to another civil war. One that he would be the indirect cause of. Cody sighs, shaking his head. That's unlikely. And I doubt anyone's in a hurry to start another war after we finally found some peace. Not even Prey. For some reason, Obi-Wan can't entirely believe that. Maybe it's the incredible amount of civil wars it takes to destroy a planet's ecosystem as thoroughly as Mandalore's has been. Still, he nods, taps his chin thoughtfully. Of course. What do you think is the greatest danger from Prey leaving?
He's unpredictable, Cody says. He has radical views and a violent tendency, so I don't know what he intends to do now.
He sighs, leans more into the back of the couch, and Obi-Wan takes a couple more bites of what's left of his stew. Are there any loyalists in his clan who might be willing to keep you updated?
It might be a longer shot, but it's worth discussing.
I'm not sure. I haven't looked into it, Cody says dubiously.
I'm sure there are ways I could find out.
It might be worth looking into, Obi-Wan says. He puts the now empty bowl aside, takes a long drink, sighs.
I don't entirely understand what he gained by leaving, especially when and in the manner he did.
Cody shrugs, frowning a bit. His pride, I assume. And he made a statement he felt was important in some way.
Obi-Wan frowns himself, considering. I suppose that makes sense. He sighs, rubs at his forehead, says,
in a slight subject change, I meant to tell you this earlier, but the Council agreed to this with the stipulation that I would still be available for Jedi missions. I'm able to pick and choose, to an extent, the missions I go on, but...
He sighs, pinches the bridge of his nose.
The Council demanded I make sure to keep the Order as my main priority.
Cody nods.
I expected as much. I would at least appreciate if you keep me informed when you're expected to do things for them, but otherwise, I understand.
That's a relief.
Of course I will, Obi-Wan says, snorting a bit. Good communication is, after all, essential to any relationship. And if I'm going to be involved in things here, it's even more important.
He hesitates a moment before adding, although I'm concerned your advisors and your people will consider my involvement to be Jedi meddling.
Yes, I've noticed you're concerned about that, Cody says, smiling wryly, and Obi-Wan grimaces a bit. As long as you don't pretend like you know everything, I doubt they'll think so.
Those types of people are some of my least favorite, Obi-Wan admits. I find them to be intolerable, honestly, and I've attempted to make sure I don't fall into the trap of becoming one such.
Cody chuckles, and Obi-Wan smiles to himself and leans back into the couch, comfortable to just sit in a warm silence and be.
The silence doesn't last very long.
Cody leans forward a bit and says, curiously,
I had them bring plants because you said someone would be disappointed if you didn't have plants in your rooms.
Obi-Wan smiles a bit, not quite bittersweet, nods.
My master, Qui-Gon,
he hesitates, then sighs and continues.
Taught me how to garden after the first time I killed a sentient. He used to always tell me that when I became a master myself, he was always very certain about that, that I should have plants in my rooms.
He pauses, then blows out a long exhale and says,
of course, he has been dead for 9 years, so I hardly think he's been keeping tabs on my interior decorating, but the thought is nice.
Cody takes note of the little bitter twist of Obi-Wan's lips and the distant sort of nostalgia in his eyes, and decides that for all this is apparently an old loss, it's still quite painful. So he nods quietly and folds his hands. I'm sorry. It's all right, Obi-Wan says, with a small smile and a light sigh. He was very important to me, and due to the nature of the Master-Padawan relationship, I... He stops, shakes his head minutely. When our mental bond was severed with his death, that wound will never fully heal.
Mental bond?
Cody asks, despite himself,
then winces.
Perhaps now isn't the best time to ask about logistics, but he doesn't quite understand what Obi-Wan is referring to. Masters and Padawans share a force bond to aid in training, Obi-Wan says, and Cody nods, slowly. I'm sure you've noticed that Anakin and I appear to communicate non-verbally at times. That's how. Unfortunately, when your mind is directly linked to someone else's and they die, it causes damage. Cody turns the concept over in his mind for a moment, thoughtfully, then frowns a little and says, So it hurts. Slowly, not entirely able to keep the sympathy out of his voice. Obi-Wan shrugs. It's been, as I said, 9 years. You get used to things after a while. We would have had the training bond properly resolved when I was knighted, but obviously there wasn't a chance for that. Cody nods again. Obi-Wan's wrong about getting used to loss like that. Sure, it gets better, but sometimes he still misses his mother, the friends that died during the wars. Well, I'm sorry regardless, he says mildly, and rubs his hands on his knees. Obi-Wan half smiles, warm. Thank you, he says, and glances away. Cody thinks for another moment. Then something occurs to him, and he grins a bit. This bond thing, he says. That's how Anakin knows what's going on? I assumed he understood a little Mandela because he's been following our conversations just fine. Yes, I've been letting him listen in on most conversations, Obi-Wan says with a chuckle, although I've no doubt he's already picking up on the language. After all, he's fluent in two already. It won't be hard for him to learn a third. That's interesting, Cody says, and means it. How many languages do you speak? Obi-Wan smiles, almost as if the question is amusing, and says, I can at least hold conversations in the major languages of every galactic power. Some of them I don't speak myself, like Shriwook. Cody would love to hear Obi-Wan attempt to speak Shriwook. He thinks that would be hilarious. I'm fluent in 4 languages, the rest simply proficient. No wonder you're a diplomat, Cody says with a short laugh. I speak a grand total of 3 languages, and one of those is really only a dialect of Mandoa. Obi-Wan's blue eyes light up with interest, and he leans toward Cody, asks, There are other dialects of Mandoa. Cody chuckles. Yes, I only know one of them. Our moon Concordia has its own variant, and then there's one spoken on the opposite side of the planet by some of the smaller communities. That one is pretty mutually intelligible, but I had to work at figuring out Concordia's language. Fascinating, Obi-Wan says, musing, and almost delighted, which is strangely endearing. Do you have any texts on it? I'd be interested in looking at them. You're in the library, Obi-Wan, Cody answers, raising an eyebrow at him. I suspect if you looked, you'd find a few, yes. Rather to his surprise, Obi-Wan rolls his eyes and mutters under his breath in a language that has a lot of vowels. Cody assumes he's being insulted and snorts quietly. Thank you for that stunning contribution, Cody, Obi-Wan says in Mandoa again, sarcastic. You're completely welcome, Obi-Wan, Cody answers, inclining his head politely. I'm always happy to help.
Obi-Wan looks flatly at him, sighs long-sufferingly.
You're as bad as Anakin.
Thank you.
Oh, that was not...
Once again, Obi-Wan switches to the language Cody doesn't understand and mutters something to himself, and Cody just chuckles and shakes his head. If you're going to continue to be insulting, I might just have to go, he says, grinning.
That was not an insult, Obi-Wan protests.
No, you were just speaking another language because you were being polite and complimenting me. Cody crosses his arms and rolls his eyes a little, amused. That's how that usually goes, I'm sure.
It's Rill, and I was asking the Force for patience, actually.
Obi-Wan seems entertained by Cody, which is fair, if he's honest. Did it give you any?
Cody thinks, based on Obi-Wan's deadpan look, that he is not making the best impression on his redoer today. Has anyone ever called you a little shit? He asks thoughtfully, although there's a mischievous glint in his eyes that Cody appreciates.
Yes, many times. Although, generally, not since I became a duke, Cody says with a conspiratorial grin.
Well, since I think I'm technically also a duke, I can call you whatever I want without repercussions, right?
Everyone is smiling amusedly, and Cody inclines his head in a mock bow.
Of course! What else are Adore for? Cody huffs.
Obi-Wan laughs, shaking his head, warm and genuine. And Cody can't help but feel like he's accomplished something. He thinks being married to Obi-Wan is going to be good after all, and finds it's easy to be relaxed with him.